Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 32 of Dogcast Radio. In this, our Christmas episode, we bring you an interview with a very special woman. Tamara Lloyd runs the Alternative Animal Sanctuary, and I first met and interviewed her for the Wag & Bone Show, where she received an award for her devotion to animals. With her at that time was Helga, the German Shepherd Cross, who was lucky enough to be in Tamara's care when terrible bad health struck. When probably almost anyone else would have let Helga go, Tamara fought for her. It cost an awful lot in many ways, not just money, but effort and emotion. Today, Helga still lives with Tamara, and we'll hear later how she's getting on. Tamara is an amazing woman. She doesn't regard what she does as anything out of the ordinary, and I think for her, it's just what she has to do. She is certainly driven to help animals, and her approach to rescue is incredible, as you can hear in the first part of our conversation, which took place at her sanctuary. Now, the thing about the Alternative Animal Sanctuary is you will take animals in that other people, or I mean sometimes everybody else, has said no to.
Yeah, I mean, over the years, as I've taken in more and more, as the finances have been stretched more and more, I've actually had to almost limit myself to saying to people that if you can find other places for them, please do so. But I always tell everybody when they come to me that come back to me and I will sort something else, so that, you know, I don't just turn people away and say, sorry, I can't help. The only, as I say, problem I do have is that I can't really take dogs that are a problem with other dogs or with other animals, because my first responsibility does have to be to the animals I already have. But if it's because they don't get on with people or because they've got medical problems, then, you know, that isn't a precursor for me to say that I won't take them. Whereas I'm a bit horrified to find that a lot of the big sanctuaries are actually pointing people in my direction, which seems a bit unfair when they have a lot more funding and staff, which I don't have of either. But I do find it very difficult. People say to me, you know, there are animals all over the world that are suffering and you can't help everything. And of course I can't, but if people tell me about something and I know that I'm their last chance, it is virtually impossible for me to say, well, I can't do something for them.
A great variety of animals have found safety and love at the sanctuary. But of course, what I wanted to hear about first was the dogs.
Tamara, how many dogs have you got?
I've got five at the moment.
And they're all rescue?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we met you first with Helga, just before the Wag & Bone, and we covered the story of her needing the cart. But there's been developments since then, haven't there?
Yes, since the show and since she came to the photo shoot, she suddenly improved amazingly, and she actually been walking. She even managed to do whole walks without the cart, and she started to run really well. So I'm hoping that things will just carry on improving into the future, and she might even be able to do without a cart in a year or so, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, so brilliant. I mean, it just shows that you were so right to give her the time, not to make the decision to have a put down, to give her that time and that chance.
Yeah, I think an awful lot of cases with all animals is that people are too impatient, and obviously there is the cost involved as well. But quite often, given enough time and if they have the right mental attitude to be able to cope with it, I think, you know, they can come through a lot better than people perhaps give them credit for.
And we've just taken the dogs for a walk in your field, and she and the other dogs just make no concessions to the cart, do they?
Absolutely nothing, no. I mean, sometimes they tip her over and she does panic a little bit, mainly because of her beginnings in life when she was quite badly abused. But in general, once she's got used to each cart, that she can get out of it and that she doesn't have to worry, she generally just sort of gets back up and sorts herself out. But no, they'll all fly along, grab hold of her, she'll grab hold of them, and she might as well not have the cart, to be honest, from what's the notice they take of it.
Yeah. I mean, what would you tell me, what do you think her quality of life is?
I think the only downsides that she has is that she can't jump, obviously, and she used to love jumping over everything. and mainly just that she used to love to jump into water, into the water troughs, into the ponds, etc. So I had to sort of adapt something so that she can still do that. But I think those are the biggest things that if you spoke to her, possibly apart from the fact that she can't scratch her own ears and things like that. So she comes over to me and sort of I know when she needs to be scratched. But I think if she could speak and could explain things, those would be the things that bothered her. In general, she just gets on with life and she doesn't really let it affect her.
Yeah, she's got a lot to live for, hasn't she?
She has, yeah. I mean, I think if she was a person, she would just see this as a challenge that she's had to overcome and not really that major an issue.
Now, you can probably hear from the sound effects, we've got four dogs around us now at the moment. So, should we start with Bruno?
Yep, Bruno was possibly between 18 months and 2 years. He was found wandering in the local town. The dog warden and I believe a couple of other local authorities were notified and none of them said they could do anything. They couldn't catch him and they were a bit wary of him because he's a boxer and a very big boxer at that. So actually it was my small nephew who was 11 at the time who gave him a sandwich and caught him. And we did look on the dog loss sites and things like that to check that nobody was looking for him. He was incredibly emaciated when he came. I've never seen a dog so thin. Mm-hmm. And he seemed as though he'd been either chained or kept in a kennel. And he was quite, his temperament was good with people, but he was quite bad with other dogs. And Helga, this was when she was, before her accident, she was walking. They went on a walk together and Helga was absolutely terrified of him. And it was only the fact that she could go at top speed and he was so in such bad condition, he just couldn't keep up with her. And then within about a week or so, they'd become absolutely best friends and inseparable. And he was devastated when she had to spend 3 months in the vets. He was just wandering around lost without her. And they were so pleased when she came back home again.
Yeah, Bruno, you come to say hello. Yeah, I mean, he looks great now, doesn't he?
He now looks really fantastic. People do say to me what a lovely looking dog he is. It took about 18 months to get him looking reasonable. He was quite an embarrassment because I just could not get the weight on him. But now he's built up a lot of muscle and he's matured and he looks quite a nice looking dog now.
So it was the issues with him were obviously feeding him up, but he just sort of fitted in with your dogs.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, at first there were worries with his temperament and I just think he hadn't come across other dogs and he was obviously reaching the sort of aggressive Bolshie age and he's entire. But it didn't take very long until, you know, he's found his place, settled in. Him and my Jack Russell sometimes have a little bit of friction because they're both quite jealous, but they sort themselves out and there's not a major problem with them. They'll all curl up on top of me on the sofa and they get on pretty well for quite a large number of animals in quite a small space.
He's gorgeous. He's doing exactly what my Labrador does now and he's pushing back between my legs and he's just sitting with his back against me like, go on, you can adore me now, I'm here.
He's incredibly cuddly and because of the type of fur he's got, he's quite nice and soft to touch. He is a really nice dog and he's very good with children and he is a really nice dog.
He's gorgeous. Now on to Jake then.
He came to me through my website, basically. I hadn't very long had a website, and the idea was to try and raise much-needed funding. But what it actually did was mean that people from all over the country then knew that I might take their animals in. And I was contacted by an Australian lady who owned a pub in Kensington, and she was returning to Australia and couldn't take the dog, and well, didn't really feel it was appropriate to take the dog. So I was looking for somewhere for him. She was worried because he's a Rottweiler about putting him into rescue. He was very materially spoiled. He had every toy and bed and everything under the sun. But he was basically just in the pub and his only exercise really was when they used to come up in the evening after the pub closed and sort of play rough with him and get him jumping up and grabbing hold of them and, you know, this sort of thing. And basically, he is a very nice dog, but he's very anxious. He doesn't have a lot of self-confidence. He was absolutely terrified when I first got him. He used to just run to any red car he saw, which he obviously thought was his owner's. He's the first dog I've had who was devastated when his owner left him. He was just beside himself. He didn't know what to do. And he was terrified of the horses, of which I've got a lot. And basically, he's just quite a nervous, anxious dog. But he's got a superb temperament. He puts up with everything from all the other dogs. He's lovely with people. And he is a very nice dog. But I think it does show that if they are kept in complete isolation and don't get to see everything they need to when they're young, it does have a lasting effect on them.
I think absolutely for every dog, but particularly, you know, with dogs, you know, your bigger dogs and your ones that can have guarding tendencies, like a Rottweiler, they really need to have that socialisation and to see situations and that this is normal and nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the problem is that dogs in some ways don't have enough freedom anymore in this country. People are either very worried what other people might think, or they don't have the time, or they don't realise how important things like socialisation, taking them out to see different things are. Mm. And once you go past a certain point, it's then very difficult for any animal, or just like a person, to suddenly accept new, strange, scary things. So really, you know, if you're taking on an animal, it is quite a large commitment in your life to make sure that it gets the best start you possibly can.
Yeah. But I mean, he's beautiful. You can just see in his eyes, and when he leans up against you, he's so soft and beautiful and loving. He's just gorgeous, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he quite often has quite a sorrowful look, and I think his life is a bit sorrowful in that he is very nervous of everything, even still now. And he's very much always wants to be with me or be able to see me, and if I'm not around, he just goes back into the house. And it is quite sad because, you know, he shouldn't be like that. He should have a lot more confidence and should be a lot happier, really. And he puts up with my Jack Russell just being on him, over him, round him continually, he just does nothing.
Well, I mean, as we're talking, the little Jack Russell is just chewing. It looks as if he's chewing on his back.
He is. I was actually quite worried that Jack Russell might start getting fur balls because he's completely ruined Jake's fur because he just has to be with him the whole time. Quite often they'll just lie down and spot or line Jake's paws, but otherwise he's like chewing his fur, cleaning his ears, cleaning around the back of him, jumping on top of him. He just has to be with Jake, doing stuff with Jake.
And Jake, he just takes it, doesn't he?
He doesn't bat an eyelid. It takes an awful lot. Sometimes it's only after hours or hours. He might just sort of do a low grumble, and Spot usually doesn't take any notice anyway.
No, I mean, I would say he's made less response than our Labrador would. Our Labrador by now would have gone, get off.
Yeah, no, I haven't ever seen a relationship like this, which has worried me a bit because I don't think it's that healthy for Jake, and also because I would assume that Jake will die before Spot does, and I just thought he's going to be so devastated. So now that Toby's come on the scene, possibly that might be less of a worry.
OK, we'll talk about Spot first. Now, he's a Jack Russell.
He is, yeah.
And how did he come to be?
A friend of mine said to me that her friend knew of somebody who had brought him. They had intended to buy a bitch to breed from, which luckily they then didn't do. He was chained up out in the garden all the time. They didn't let him in the house. When I first got him, he wouldn't eat from a bowl, and he was really, really skinny. And I think that they just sort of threw scraps on the floor to him. I gather the husband used to beat him up quite regularly. He used to run away quite frequently, not so surprisingly. And it all sounded all quite sad and awful. So I said to my friend that I'd have him. She then went back to her friend, and she was told that they didn't want to get rid of him until after the summer holidays because the stepchildren came to play and they liked it, playing with him. Then suddenly, a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call from my friend saying, could she bring him up this evening? And I said, yep, that's fine, but you know what's happened. And I gather the kids had let him come into the house, and he was so scared when the husband came home that he peed on the carpet. And so he'd been shut in the garage, and they said he wasn't to come out. So they brought him up that day, and he was just stuck. We were going to change his name to Glue, actually, because he was just stuck to me. Wherever I went, he was on top of me. When I tried to get on the horses, he was almost trying to get on the horses with me. And he's a very, very adorable dog. The only downsides to him is that he does like hunting after rabbits, and I can't trust him with cats, which I do find quite difficult because I've always had dogs that have loved cats.
Yeah.
But sadly, that is part and parcel of the breed and who he is, and I'm not going to change it. But apart from that, he is pretty adorable. He loves people despite what happened to him, and he's pretty good with all the other dogs. I say him and Bruno have a little bit of friction, but he's generally a pretty all-round nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's gorgeous, and whereas Bruno sort of uses the bouncing and I'm in your face technique to get attention, he sits and he waits and you notice how cute and retiring he's been.
He does the adorable, quite sorrowful look, and he's not at all a sorrowful dog, he's a very happy little chap, but he'll sit there until somebody turns around, oh, poor little chap, and just want to give it, because he's so incredibly cuddly and adorable looking. Yeah. He is just really quite gorgeous.
Yeah.
Even objectively speaking.
I mean, it's amazing when you think, what an awful start, you know, and yet he I mean, you can look in his eyes and he's just so gentle. And as you say, he just wants affection. And he's not at all aggressive, you know. It's a testament to giving that second chance to the dogs, isn't it?
It is quite surprising, I must admit, with a lot of the different animals that I've got, considering what's happened to them in their past, whereas you hear about people who do awful crimes and you're told that they had a bad start. A lot of it's not always, you know, some animals it does scar them for life, but a lot of them, they seem to just be able to bounce back and just be incredibly lovely. Yeah. Considering what was done to them.
That never ceases to amaze me, how they'll forgive and say, okay, I'll give this horrible species another chance, you know, I'll open myself up again, I'll put myself at risk. It's just amazing.
I think they just take individuals as they are. I think animals and children are incredibly good at seeing through people because they're not really taken in by disguise. And
yeah.
I think they can, you know, can learn to just see the next person in with a fresh set of eyes, which is just as well, really.
Now, so Toby's the latest arrival.
Yep, he only came a couple of weeks ago.
Right. And he's a terrier mix?
He's a Border Terrier cross Jack Russell.
Oh, right. And how did he come to be here?
A lady phoned me up, having been directed to me from one of the big charities, which I always find a bit alarming, considering I don't have any money and I'm doing this on my own. But basically, they'd all turned her down because she said that he was aggressive and they didn't want to be landed with a dog that they might find difficult to rehome.
Mm.
And she said that he'd been to kennels and the kennels refused to keep him because he'd snarled at them, he'd snarled at her, he'd snarled at the vet, and the vet said that, you know, there wasn't much that could be done with him, and basically he'd sort of been written off, which as a 1 year old small terrier seemed a bit extreme to me. So she brought him up and he seemed absolutely fine, and then there was something that scared him. I couldn't quite make out what it was, but it was quite clear that he was scared of something, and he went for me. And then he went into his bed, which is where he'd been sent as punishment, and he went for me again.
Yeah.
And then we had another small altercation later on. But basically, I didn't even have to smack him or anything. I just said, no, you know, you don't behave like that. And after the first day, I haven't had any trouble with him since.
Yeah.
So I have had him with children. I've had him with all the other animals.
Yeah.
There are a couple of men that he's been scared of, but you know, basically he's an okay dog, and I just think as a 1 year old dog put in kennels, he probably wouldn't have stood that much of a chance.
No.
And he's not the most attractive of dogs either. Oh. Are you? Hey.
I would say he was strawberry blonde, would you say? He's gorgeous. I think he's pretty. I have to say, when we arrived, I opened the door and he was straight in the car and on my lap, sort of, where are we going then?
I did have, when I first got him, I had trouble getting him to go in the car. But then when I took him to places, he would just fly straight out, which took me by, I mean, it was stupid. I should have been more prepared, but I can't, the couple of places I took him to, Tesco's and somewhere else, and he just suddenly bolted out of the car, which was somewhat alarming. But even then, after the first couple of car journeys, when I told him that he has to stay in the car when I open the door, he's, you know, he got the hang of that, and he's quite a bright little button, it's not exactly difficult to train. And it just seems a shame that, you know, a lot of people don't seem to realise that you do have to be strict with animals, just like you do with kids, otherwise you're going to have delinquents. But to just write them off and end up having them put down because you haven't brought them up to understand what they can and can't do just doesn't seem very fair.
No. And, I mean, we were talking about training methods, and I think one of the things is, you know, we were saying people don't always understand how to convey things to the dog. And I think if it's not working, try something else.
Yeah, I think people need to keep things quite clear and obvious. I think people make the mistake of sometimes treating animals as lesser beings that they don't really need to worry too much about, and then at the same time expecting them to understand, you know, similar behaviours as a psychologist or something. And really, it just has to be clear, you have to be consistent, which I think is another big problem. People, it depends how they feel from one day to the next. If the dog can jump up one day because they're not really too bothered, and then the next day they've got nice clothes on and they go mad because the dog's jumping up with muddy feet. You know, if there are things that are important to you, if the dog's not allowed on the sofa, then you can't ever let it on the sofa. Yeah. If you don't mind it being on the sofa, then you can't expect suddenly one day that you can tell it not to get on the sofa. And it just has to be clear and obvious. And I don't agree with this quite deep psychological training of, you know, you can tell the dog to sit in a corner and it'll understand it's been naughty, because it won't.
No.
It needs to be told firmly at the time that something isn't acceptable. You don't need to beat them up or be abusive, but you do need to be quite strict and, as I say, consistent and firm.
And it's matching the, you know, when you say sort of strict, I think you have to match the response. You know, as with children, I used to teach, and there were some children that you could say no to, and that was enough, you know. And if you've got a gentle dog like Jake, you know, albeit he's a Rottweiler, you match your response more to their character, don't you? Do you think that?
Yeah, I mean, some dogs, quite a lot of mine, I only just need to look at them and they know that I don't want them to do something. And as you say, you know, if you've got a very bold, bolshy animal, sometimes you have to be that bit firmer than one that's going to die if you, you know, turn around and shout at it. And, you know, animals are just as different as people and they have just as different responses and understandings. And you might come across a really incredibly thick dog that just can't understand what you're actually trying to tell it. And there's no point screaming at it, hitting it more or anything else, because if it doesn't understand what you want from it, just like if you come across a person that can't cope with, you know, the same educational techniques, you've got to change things.
Yeah. Now, your five dogs live with an amazing variety of other animals, don't they? What else have you got living here?
They do. I've got horses, terrapins, pigeons, rabbits, guinea pigs, ferrets, pigs, goats, fish, small animals, just about anything that people don't want, really.
Yeah, so they certainly get a good socialisation here.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to do an awful lot more of dog rescue. I'd like to have the facilities that I could take in more dogs, because I think an awful lot of dogs are written off unnecessarily. And I don't have any trouble taking in dogs that have problems with humans, but I do have more of a problem with taking in dogs that I might not be able to trust with the other animals, because my responsibility does have to be with the animals that I've got, and to make sure that they stay safe and are, you know, are adequately looked after. So as I say, what I would love is to have the facilities where I could do more, but at the moment I'm a bit confined to what I can work with.
Yeah, yeah. And how can people help support the Alternative Animal Sanctuary?
Well, I've got a website at www.alternativesanctuary.co.uk. People can donate online, sponsor an animal. There's also my telephone number and my address on that if people would like to speak to me direct or send donations via check, etc. What I would really love to do at the moment is I'm trying to set up an animal sanctuary in Romania, because people have been contacted me about the desperate situation there is out there, and nobody's really working out there at the moment, but it's becoming a bit of an uphill struggle because I just don't have the finances to spread there as well. But I would like to do a lot more, but unfortunately it's always money that that keeps the restriction on it, so I can only do what I can with what I've got.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time, letting us meet all your animals.
That's quite okay.
And it's they're a lovely animal family. They're just gorgeous, aren't they? It really is a testament to giving dogs that second chance.
They are. I mean, they sometimes look as though they're all trying to kill each other when they're very excited going on a walk. But in general, when we're just sitting in the house or out doing stuff with the animals, they'll just follow me around or sit down by me and snuggle up with each other. And there is very little trouble between them, and considering they've come from very different backgrounds, they're very different breeds. Most of them are quite dominant, arguably would be described as aggressive type breeds, yet they do fit in. They fit in with the other animals. Most of them have come and never seen horses or geese or chickens or anything else before, and they have to learn to get along with those. So I think, you know, it does just show that not every animal, but most animals, given the right sort of situation, they can do well.
Yeah. Now you've got five dogs at the moment.
Yep.
Have you had other dogs that you've rescued?
Yeah, I mean, we started rescuing dogs. My mother was the main sort of instigator when we were children, and we've had possibly thousands of dogs over a 30-year period. We used to do an awful lot of rehoming. Obviously, the plus side of rehoming is that you free up space for more dogs to come along. The downside is that it's very time-consuming and emotionally draining. I mean, in general, things always went well, but you do occasionally have the unscrupulous peoples that aren't honest with you, that, you know, you do find that you've made a mistake. It is quite a stressful situation to be sure that you are doing the best for those animals. I must admit, I find it for selfish reasons that I get very attached to the animals very quickly. I find it difficult to then move them on. I do also find that just as one person, as I say, it is quite difficult to make sure that you do all the checks and the balances that you need to do.
How many horses have you actually got here?
I've got 33.
Wow. That's a lot of horses.
It is a lot of horses. In the summer, it's not so bad. In the winter, to be honest, it is a nightmare because I'm doing them on my own. They're in at night. They need to be rugged. They need to be fed, hayed, watered. And it does take quite a lot to keep on top of everything. I usually get about 4 hours sleep during the winter months because I just can't fit it all in, because I have a full-time job as well, because I wouldn't be able to afford to keep them otherwise.
Tamara's life is far from easy, but she does it all for the animals she loves. During our visit, we encountered a wide variety of different species. Considering the fact that Tamara's animals have been brought together by necessity and circumstance rather than by any design, how well does it all work?
Now, obviously, that's a very risky strategy to say, you know, I will take the animals that sort of other people think aren't worthy of another chance, or it's too much trouble, too much work, it's going to cost too much, you know. That's quite a risk. Does it generally work out?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest risk I have of it is basically financial. I mean, last year at this time, I didn't know what I was going to do. I've got £40,000 of personal debts. I couldn't borrow any more money. I had Helga, the dog in a wheelchair, who'd cost £3,000 by that stage. She's now cost me about £5,000. I had two of the horses who had to have serious costly operations. I had a few rabbits that cost me £400 each with operations for their teeth. And I just didn't know where I was going to go. I turned to the bigger sanctuaries, who basically said that, you know, I shouldn't really be doing it if I couldn't manage to support myself. And as I say, I didn't know where else I could get money from. I then became a registered charity, and I did find somebody who helped me with fundraising to get me through the winter. But I am not in such a bad emergency state, but I am getting back to that sort of situation again now, and it is very difficult for the future. But from the point of view of taking on animals where people, you know, really don't feel there's a chance, I think I can honestly say, hand on heart, that I haven't had one that's caused me a problem. I mean, yes, there have been things that have gone wrong. There always are in life. But I wouldn't say that I've ever had to turn around and say, no, they were right and you can't do something with this animal. I mean, it doesn't mean to say that that won't ever happen. But so far, I think in part because I'm quite a small place insofar as I do it on my own, and all the animals basically have the freedom and the space, it does make a big difference if an animal with all the best will in the world goes to one of the big rescue centres. Sometimes, you know, just being shut in a kennel and just having the stress and the noise and the hubbub going on all around without having the close personal contact means that they just can't improve, and they actually get worse. And, you know, I don't think it's any of the different organisations to blame, because they're all doing their best. But that isn't an ideal environment if something already has a problem. If it's a perfect animal with no problems, you know, sometimes they can even be affected by that sort of situation. Sometimes, you know, they'll be lucky and they'll be able to cope with it, but it is very difficult when people continually get animals that they then can't look after and chuck out. It's difficult to know what to do. Everybody just tries to do what they can for the best.
And in an ideal world, if you could get the funds that would help you, what would your vision be for the alternative animal sanctuary?
I'd very much like to have my own premises in this country where I could take in more animals. I'd like to do sort of more educational based work and try and encourage people to look after their animals better and just think more carefully and maybe not get an animal. And I would very much like to do some work in other countries as well, where there are obviously major problems. I think this country probably has almost equal problems to other countries, but they're just different. It's not so much abstract cruelty, it's the fact that people are ignorant and are very irresponsible. I'm amazed about the amount of animals that come to me when people have had them for a year or only a few months, and it's like a toy or an electrical product that no longer fits in the house, or they haven't thought through and they just want to get rid of. I've had people who've spoken to me and almost talked to me as though it was an old freezer that they want me to come and collect. And it's just very sad. I don't think the English so much look at animals as animals, their possessions and their material goods. And if they don't work or they don't fit in, then you get rid of them.
Whereas if it's, I always say, if it's broke, you can fix it, but it just takes a bit of effort.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised about, I mean, it's possibly less frequent in the dog world, but certainly in the horse world, the amount of horses that are ridden off as young horses when, yes, it might take a couple of years for them to recover from an injury and you might not be able to do the same things that they could do otherwise. But that might apply to many people in their life, might have an injury that's going to take a while and they just can't run a marathon afterwards, but you don't then just get rid of them or not want them anymore. And virtually all of my horses are all ridden, and a lot of them have had injuries that they've been ridden off about. And if they have go through a bad patch and they need a lot of rest, sometimes I've had them rested for a year, 2 years if they need it. But usually they, given rest and time, they will come right, or they'll still do something in their life, even if it's just being walked out and having children come and groom them and this sort of thing. But I just, I think we've lost our sort of intrinsic value in animals now. They're not looked at for their value in themselves.
The animals at the sanctuary certainly are valued. As I met dogs and horses that had been condemned as too dangerous to live, and yet were as gentle as you could wish, I began to realise the extent of tomorrow's achievements. When you look into beautiful, soft, doggy eyes that only reflect love, but that left to the mercy of others would have been closed forever long ago, it really is deeply touching. Another example of tomorrow's success is the many rabbits that happily live together, although their owners insisted they would not do this. Tamara allows the animals the space and time to heal. It's wonderful to witness and support. And if you wish to do that, please visit Tamara's website, which there is a link to on the Dogcast site.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
And now, 2 Minute Fiction. The Thought That Counts. Written and read by Julie Hill. Christmas, amongst other things, means shopping. And Mr. Thompson's pet shop had been busy all day. For Mr. Thompson, this was great, because he sensibly enjoyed making money. But he also enjoyed meeting and observing his customers. He liked to watch them make their choices, see what they liked, what they didn't, and what influenced their decisions. He had observed all this while patiently serving a youngster, choosing a present for his dog, a spaniel who enjoyed swimming. Apparently, the spaniel especially liked retrieving items from water, and so the dog's young master pored and deliberated over a floating disc or a floating cylindrical toy. Then again, maybe he should choose a large tennis-style ball that promised it wouldn't sink. Perhaps, though, it would be better to opt for a chew or a new bed, as the dog in question already possessed so many water toys. Mr. Thompson allowed the boy to take his time. He listened to him, weighing up all sides of the problem, but, like all good counsellors, not bringing his own opinions to the conversation, just allowing the boy room to make his own mind up in his own time. The shopkeeper knew just how important it was for the boy to select a present that he felt would make his dog happy, thereby making the boy himself happy. Never mind that the boy had a very small amount to spend, it would not be the cost of the present that would make it a success or failure, but the dog's delight in the toy, his exuberance in playing with it, and the fun the two of them would have. The boy needed to feel he had bought the right thing, and to do that, he he needed to think. And so in this case, it wasn't the price that mattered. Finally, the boy made his choice and left the shop happily, wishing Mr. Thompson a Merry Christmas as he deposited the small sum into the till. Later, another customer gave Mr. Thompson food for thought. A lady called Jill popped in, intending to stay briefly, but actually staying for a lengthy chat. Jill had visited the shop with increasing frequency, buying with increasing desperation products and preparations to help relieve her golden retriever's suffering as a chronic condition took a greater hold on her. The dog in question often accompanied her owner, and Mr. Thompson fondly caressed her silky ears as he listened to the latest bad news from the vet and sympathised with Jill. Gradually, the dog's suffering increased, and her life became more and more difficult. Eventually, after many tears, advice from the vet, heart-searching and a lot of thought, Jill knew the time was right to let her dog go. The vet visited Jill and her dog at home, and with dignity and love, the suffering was ended and the dog found peace. Today, Jill came to the shop on her own, and though she knew she had done the right thing, she was still overwhelmed with guilt, grief and if-onlys. Mr. Thompson listened and assured her there was nothing more she could have done. She had given her dog the best life she could have, had given her all the support she could have, and had given her the best present she could have. Release. Although Jill was facing life without her best friend, she had the comfort that she had put her dog's needs before her own. She had thought more of her dog than of herself, and had been brave enough to face one of the most difficult decisions she had ever made, and it was in thinking of her dog so much that she had found the strength to resist the coward's way out. Just before closing time, a woman with two children rushed in, obviously harassed, and in urgent need of hamster food to see them through the festive period. One of the children saw the dog's toys and immediately started whining. "Can we have a puppy for Christmas, Mum? Please, please." Barely listening, the woman brushed aside the request. "No." Both children had taken up the refrain now, though, and were petitioning noisily to have a dog for Christmas. Having had enough, the woman turned to her children. "Be quiet," she said authoritatively. "We are not having a dog. Would you two walk him and play with him and train him? Would you pick up and clean away all the messes he would make around the house? Would you stop playing computer games and surfing the net long enough to spend time with him? And would you give up your pocket money so that we can afford to take him to the vet?" The children looked subdued now. "And anyway, Christmas is completely the wrong time to bring a puppy into the house. All the noise and people coming and going, no one having time to look after him, dangerous things all around the house, plus a Christmas tree for him to attack and damage. Do I need to carry on?" The children shook their heads gloomily and followed their mother as she left the shop, rushing off to her next chore. Mr. Thompson smiled to himself as he closed up the shop, locking the door, switching off the main lights, leaving only the Christmas ones twinkling in the window display. Presents came in many different shapes, and that mother had just given her children one of the best by being a great role model of thinking things through first, and of treating animals with the respect they deserve. The thing about presents is that it isn't how much they cost. It's how well they meet the needs of the receiver of the gift. And thus, a thoughtfully chosen inexpensive gift can delight. A difficult decision thought through carefully can be the right thing to do. And thinking things through ahead of time can stop a world of heartbreak. It really is the thought that counts. And that was The Thought That Counts, written and read by Julie Hill.
Hello and welcome to the very Christmassy Dogcast Radio News. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. In today's programme we have a small sack full of festive stories about doggy gifts. But first, some ways that you can help dogs during the holiday season.
Yes, we all know a dog is for life and not just for Christmas. But there are ways you can get a dog for Christmas and do the right thing.
You could sponsor a guide or assistance dog.
Many dogs at shelters are also desperate for sponsors.
Find time over the festivities to get down to your local shelter and take a dog for a walk.
And dogs feature on many of the charity calendars on sale.
If you haven't got a dog this Christmas, here's a treat for you, Puppy Watch. Here you can watch delightful puppies who live at Dogs Trust in the UK. On the site there's information about the puppies, including their routine, such as feeding and so on. There's a link on the Dogcast site.
Now, while a dog is not a good Christmas present, they certainly receive their fair share of gifts. In America, it is expected that pet owners will be spending over $3 billion this Christmas. And of course, most of that will be going to the dogs. There is a bewildering variety of presents on offer for your dog, ranging from the practical, such as a new bed, to the more decadent, such as a manicure or massage. Fido can even meet Santa at the mall and get his photo taken.
As Bob Viteri, president of the American Pet Product Manufacturers Association, points out, we're making our dogs a bigger and bigger part of our families and splashing out on them at Christmas. Both baby boomers, whose children have moved on with their lives, and young professionals who are delaying having families in favour of careers are turning to pets to fill the void at home, he said. With these families' higher than average disposable incomes, their pets are enjoying elaborate high-end and high-tech products, as well as innovative devices designed for convenience for the pet owner.
According to the association, 8 out of 10 dog owners buy presents for their dogs, with the average gift costing $17. However, here at Dogcast Radio, we think the present our dogs actually want costs nothing at all. It's more time with us, more attention, more playing, and more walks. And you can't find that in any store.
One dog has given a great Christmas present, but not to people, to penguins. A Maremma sheepdog called Oddball has been guarding penguins at Warrnambool's Middle Island. Oddball's presence has meant that foxes have kept away, and the penguins have been safe to come and go and to do the most important thing penguins do, produce little penguins. Thanks to Protective Oddball, there has been an increase in the number of penguin chicks on the island. And how is Oddball spending Christmas? She's back home on the farm, still guarding birds, but this time a breed she's more familiar with, chickens.
Let's hope for her family's sake she doesn't get too protective over their Christmas turkey. And finally, to a dog who is the best Christmas present his family could have asked for. The Hanson family dog Rocky, a pit bull, went missing without a trace and the family despaired. When a neighbour found the dog, she put up posters around the area, and Mary Hanson spotted one. She described it as a Christmas blessing. Rocky is now back with his people, and we're sure he'll be made an extra fuss of this Christmas.
And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Merry Christmas.
If you follow the link on the Dogcast site to a strand about an article on dog intelligence, you're in for an interesting read. The article lists the most and least intelligent dog breeds. And on dig.com, there is a discussion of this, with lots of comments about dogs that don't fit the expectation of their breed. It made me think about how we interpret our dogs' behaviour. Maybe if we value intelligence, we are more likely to perceive that our dog exhibits clever behaviour. Alternatively, if we admire independence, are we more likely to see and praise that about our dog? Of course, it's also true that just like people, dogs are individuals. And though breed standards are an indication of what to expect, they are no guarantee. That's a wonderful thing, though, because when you bring a dog into your life, you set out on a voyage of discovery together, and no destination is ever the same. We've had a brilliant 2006, sharing an enthusiasm for everything and anything dog-related with you, and we look forward to more of the same in 2007. From all the team here at Dogcast Radio, we wish you a happy, healthy and peaceful Christmas and New Year. Until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 84922022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121280922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Who delivers Christmas presents to dogs? Santa Paws. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.